Hello, world, and welcome back to the Skid Pod. I'm your host, Ben Harwood, instructional designer here in the Learning Experience Design and Digital Scholarship Group at Skidmore College in the Lucy Scribner Library. And today I'm joined by Professor Bo Breslin, professor in the Political Science Department and author of this book, The Constitution for the Living, Imagining How Five Generations of Americans Would Rewrite the Nation's Fundamental Law. So, Bo Breslin, please tell us a little bit about yourself before we dive into your book.
Yeah, sure. And Ben, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm super excited to be here. It's an interesting time to be talking about the Constitution, for sure. So I'm a political scientist, and I've been at Skidmore for a long time. And I've been interested in the Constitution since I was an undergraduate. I teach traditional courses on public law here, which is the constitutional law, civil liberties, judicial process sequence. Mm-hmm. I write primarily about the texts themselves, the constitutions themselves. So it's a little bit different than what I do in the classroom. In the classroom, we're talking about how the Supreme Court interprets constitutions. My work is really about constitutions generally. That said, there's obviously a lot of overlap. I've been interested in the Constitution ever since an undergraduate, I realized that you could create a world from a parchment piece of paper, right? The founders in late 18th century America sat down to think about what is the best political design they could come up with, and they wrote it down, and now we live in that world. Like, that's pretty mind-blowing to think about. The fact that bombs and bullets don't need to change worlds, but parchment paper will change a world. So I've been interested in constitutions for about 40 years.
This book captures very intense scholarship, but it also makes it somewhat accessible to the public at large. You open, in your preface, you talk about visiting a museum, it's in Philadelphia, about the Constitution.
That image of being in Philadelphia and going to the National Constitution Center, and you are forced in that museum, you are forced to make a decision about whether you would ratify the Constitution, and asks you to reflect on your reverence for the Constitution, your disdain for the Constitution, just like they did in 1787 and 1788 when they were voting up and down on ratification. And there is an actual moment in which you're asked to either sign or not sign the Constitution. And I think that's a super important moment. What I like to say to my students is that they should forge a personal relationship with the Constitution itself, right? Well, the way it works now, as you know, the way it works now is there's always an intermediary. We think about that Constitution that changed the world. We think about it through the intermediary of the judiciary. The judiciary tells us what various clauses of the Constitution say. And I actually think that's a mistake. As a citizen of the United States, as somebody who cares about civic education, we ought to forge a relationship with the Constitution itself. This book itself is kind of a thought experiment. It's a speculative history thought experiment. And the elevator pitch of this book is that Madison and Jefferson disagreed about the enduring nature of a constitution. Madison thought a constitution should last for 50, 100, 150 years in order to build up the credibility and reverence so that it would be authoritative in a country like the United States. Jefferson thought that was a form of tyranny, right? Mm-hmm. That a constitution 150 or now 238 years old, written by generations past, was just another form of tyranny, and each generation, Jefferson said, ought to write its own constitution. And they fought about it their whole lives. They disagreed on it their whole lives. My book imagines that Jefferson won that debate. We know Madison won the debate. The Constitution is 238 years old. But if Jefferson had won that debate, what would those constitutions have looked like in American history? And so I just imagine what five generations of Americans would have written down in their constitution if they had a chance to go back to Philadelphia and do a new constitutional convention at periodic moments in American
history. In your book, you have five, you know, conventions. Yeah. If we were to have a convention today, what issues would we be talking about?
I think there would be structural topics. Do we still want only a four-year president? Maybe we want a six-year president, or maybe we want an eight-year president, and that president can only sit for one term so that the president automatically is a lame duck, but has 8 years to kind of do the work. Do we still want a federal judiciary that has life tenure? Probably not. 18-year terms. Mm-hmm. I think one of the major structural changes that would come about today in a constitutional convention is term limits for Congress members. The Senate is absurd, right? The Senate is ridiculous because California has 40 times the population of Wyoming, and yet they have that same representation in the Senate. So it's the most anti-democratic legislature in the world is the Senate. Then you'd have the social cultural issues, issues of rights. How do you deal with gun control and abortion and same-sex marriage and trans identity and LGBTQ plus environmental issues that would come? No constitution that's been written in the last 50 years at the international level doesn't have some clause about protecting the environment. We don't. Mm-hmm. Our constitution doesn't. So I think there'd be structural issues that we could talk about and would be part of a constitutional convention. I think there'd be rights-based social cultural issues and environmental issues.
Why isn't there any mention of political parties in the Constitution?
Because they didn't. I mean, this is as simple of an answer as we're going to get, and that is because the framers in late 18th century America did not anticipate political parties. The Constitution, I will always tell my students, the Constitution changed the world. Why? Because it's the longest enduring national constitution. It's not the first. Articles of Confederation is the first, but the Articles was just a confederation of separate states. So, it's like the EU, right? Okay. It's a thin connection with the Articles of Confederation. So our Constitution is really the first kind of really national constitution, written constitution. Now, today, all but three of the nations of the world have a written constitution. In 1787, we were the only one. Nowadays, all but three. The UK doesn't have one, New Zealand, and Israel. But every other country in the world has a constitution. Our constitution kind of set the table. That's part of the reason why we revere it. But the men who wrote it were flawed. And quite frankly, the men who wrote it, a lot of them were drinking most of the time too. I don't necessarily, but it's late 18th century. They spent a lot of time in the taverns. So they have blind spots. And one of their major blind spots is they didn't anticipate political parties.
Okay.
Nowadays, as you know, let's go to the Constitutional Convention. You have to do something about political parties.
Mm-hmm.
Take Congress and the presidency today, right? It's all about political parties.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the thing that Madison would most be angry about? It's probably the rise and eclipse of political parties above everything in American politics, or at least at the national level, because they didn't anticipate.
What kinds of magical moments come out for students in your kind of experiment, your democracy experiment in your class?
I've had to do something this semester in my introduction to American politics class that I've never had to do before. Mm-hmm. Once every 3 weeks, I've had to stop the class, spend an hour exploring the questions that they have about what is an unconventional Washington, D.C. Because the news cycle is so short, and B, there's all sorts of unconventional activity happening in Washington, especially in the White House. I've had to stop and say, all right, folks, let's dissect what's going on. Tariffs, immigration. Then when I have to pivot and talk about, you know, the whether it's Abreu Garcia in El Salvador not being able to come back despite the fact that the Supreme Court said you got to come back, and I got to pivot and talk to my students about that sort of stuff. Mm. I have to weigh the various value, the different value of either sticking to the traditional syllabus or having a moment. And I think right now, students are looking for the pivot. When I teach my upper level constitutional law and civil liberties classes, what I've over the course of my career come to understand is this conservative court really is shaking the foundation of constitutional law, right? It's been a long time since we've had a very solid partisan court. So now you have to think about constitutional law and civil liberties classes in a slightly different way because of the way in which this court has decided to sort of impose what is a very partisan position on a lot of different issues. Let's talk about AI first. Artificial intelligence can do a bang-up job in the amount of time it takes us to finish this podcast to write a beautiful constitution forwards and backwards. But let me tell you a brief story about the founding and then as it relates to generative AI or, you know, figuring out a way in which AI could draft a document for us. And it goes like this. So I tell my students to pull a Madison at some point in their lives, right? And what I mean by that is Madison was brilliant. He wasn't, you know, he had some flaws for sure. But he was brilliant in a couple ways. One, he sort of kept all of this, you know, design in his head. But two, he understood the politics of the moment. And so he arrives in Philadelphia. He's from Virginia, as you know, and he arrives in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787, ready to go. And actually, the story is that the Pennsylvania delegation, Franklin, and the Virginia delegation sort of met beforehand, before the convention starts,
The
right?
meeting before the meeting.
The meeting before the meeting. And a lot of what was crafted, a lot of what ended up being in the Constitution was decided in those, you know, wonderful dinner parties at Franklin's house, right? So, but anyway, Madison understood the how to play the room. And so what he does, he crafts a document. He comes with what's called the Virginia Plan. And you might remember that from your senior year of high school, the Virginia Plan and the New Jersey Plan. And so he comes with the Virginia Plan on day one. And he literally, you know, he didn't do it. Randolph did it, but Madison metaphorically throws it on the table, the Virginia Plan. Why is that the brilliant move? Because ultimately, then the conversation from then on becomes a conversation about Madison's Virginia Plan, right? He sort of had the document, and that's exactly what he wants because he wants his vision. What I think could happen now in a deeply polarized America where I might go to Philadelphia and I might have somebody who completely disagrees with me on the political spectrum. What generative AI could do is give you a draft to work with that wouldn't require me and that person who I disagree with completely to agree on, you know, basic stuff. So then it becomes a conversation about that and how do you tweak it? It wouldn't solve all of our problems because there's polarization everywhere. You have a document that becomes the talking point, it solves at least 10% of the polarization problem because now we're all trying to work with this one document. And you can't do it as an individual because if I come in there with an already written document, the person who's on the ideological polar opposite of me is not gonna think it's credible. But if it's a generative AI designed document, it becomes a little bit more palatable that we can have a conversation about how to tweak it here or there. It's not going to solve all of our problem, but I actually think AI would do a good job of starting the ball rolling in the same way that Madison did with the